Indeed, and the wild card line is open for you, too, with Paul Burley, our special guest here on Coast to Coast AM. As we get your week rolling into Tuesday, can't believe it's going to be Wednesday soon enough. We shall be back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Paul, how do you think, because these things were thousands of years old, how did they make them? I mean, like Easter Island, they're saying that these huge structures, they may have walked them into place side by side. I find that hard to believe. How do you think they made these?
Well, the structures themselves, that's the $64,000 question, how they got these stones moved and put into place. And each culture probably had a specific way of moving these stones. I have some ideas as to how they might have been able to move the stones, but they're not much more than ideas or speculations that I would like to pursue, particularly regarding the stones at Stonehenge. But it comes down to wanting to do these types of things so badly that you will do whatever you have to do in order to accomplish that. In other words, these people 4,500 years ago on Salisbury Plain had the will to build Stonehenge. They were going to do what was necessary in order to create a structure that was going to stand eternally and represent these very sacred relationships of people and the universe. And we simply don't have the will today. If we were going to build Stonehenge today with the same stones, we'd build a huge crane in order to move these stones.
Yes,
we generally don't have those cranes now, but these people did it with sheer human power to accomplish this. They had the will for it.
Some kind of intelligence. I mean, I'm thinking maybe they had sound resonance. They were able to use vibration and move these blocks. Who knows? Are you familiar with Coral Castle in Florida?
I am, and that's a fascinating site, and the work that was done there in order to build the structures there and move the stones. Yeah, the possibility of levitation in some fashion is possible.
Yes.
And I can't discount any of the theories. None of us should be discounting any of the theories, because none of us know specifically what devices or by what means technologies were used, if one or several of them were. So,
and this was
doubt there's an explanation there. It's just going to be a matter of time of finding that right one.
And Paul, this was a guy who worked Edward Leeds Scullin. He did this by himself.
Right. Yeah,
in darkness, didn't want anybody to see what he did.
I think if we were all had that opportunity to do what he did, we'd probably do it in quiet too, rather than show what he's accomplishing, because the technology would probably be taken right away from us
So you would agree, though, that he might have had some kind of really specialized technology.
In order to accomplish what he did, it's very possible that he had a technology that he had come upon that may be very ancient in order to move these stones.
Yes.
I will say, though, that one of my favorite sayings is, anything is possible, few things are probable. So that we have all of these theories, and any of them is possible to have worked potentially. But the probability of certain ones working, there's only a few of them that would be probable from a calculating standpoint,
right,
being able to do it. And ultimately, one was used. So until we can figure out that one, it stands for anyone to chance upon that discovery of which one that was.
And he used to say that he knew the secrets of the pyramids. So maybe he did.
Yeah, maybe he did. I think that there's information out there about him and what he was able to accomplish, and I believe that it should be taken in good faith that what he was attempting to be doing was move these stones very simply, and it wouldn't take very much for someone to analyze and attempt to copy what he was doing and see if it works. A matter of having the funding for it. So the question is, who's going to want to fund that project? But if the funding was there, people would try to do the same thing, I think, in broad daylight to demonstrate that it works. So until that point, we'll have to wait and see. But I would love to do that. I would love to be looking at sonic resonance and the different ways that these stones were moved But it'll come. I'm sure we'll figure it out.
So really, like, even with Stonehenge, one, we're baffled how they made the structure, how they got there. We're baffled what it was really used for. I mean, did people pray in the middle? Maybe was it a power source? I mean, would you be regenerated? Let's say people just sat in the middle of it and it healed people. Is it like a medical device?
Yeah. I go back to, there are many theories here. There's very little data, little information to go on. So there are many theories. All I can do is go back to what the symbolism is showing us. There's no written records. There's very little archaeological evidence for indicating what Stonehenge was used for. But we do know that there's this alignment of the sun rising on June 21st, and over the horizon the sun would appear, and the light would then shine down along the last portion of the avenue, which is a structure that it comes out from the northeast from Stonehenge, and the light would penetrate right into the center of Stonehenge. Now, Stonehenge is a very sacred space. One does not desecrate that space. One creates it, and then it stands alone to represent these sacred relationships. Therefore, people should not be entering into that circle. There may be druids when there were Celts that were going into that circle possibly, or there could have been priests or priestesses a couple thousand years before that when Stonehenge was constructed. Those people may enter into the space, but the average person does not, and that's very common around the world throughout time that we generally don't go in there. So what is Stonehenge being used for? Stonehenge, on June 21st, when the sun rises and that sun penetrates into the center of Stonehenge, this is the conception of new life for the coming year that is happening. This is the bringing together the sun's energy, which is representing the universe, the source of life, and Mother Earth, represented by Stonehenge, constructed of stones, constructed of Mother Earth. And so Stonehenge is the womb for the life that is on Earth, in combination with the cosmic source of energy of life, that being represented by the sun. And you have the conception of new life occurring on June 21st. And so if you're standing in the middle of Stonehenge and you're facing the sun and watching it come up, you now have interfered with that from occurring. You have prevented nature from doing what it should be doing with the cosmos and the earth coming together and creating new life, because you're standing in the way and you're receiving that sun's energy. So you're not allowing what the original intention of the structure was, to allow this to happen and to stand on the outside and experience the bringing of new life, life to earth. So that's the original use. Now, could it have been used for other ways later on? And could the Celts have been inside it and watching the sunrise? It's very possible that we were. We don't know. Mm-hmm. It's possible. But I would say that knowing what the original use of Stonehenge was, where we stand outside and allow this process, this miraculous process, to occur for new life, we should respect that and therefore stay out of Stonehenge, because this was the original builder's intent. But I'm not going to tell people to stay out of there. But I think if you wanted to honor these people and what they created for us, when we see this fantastic structure before us, honor it and, you know, stay out of the Henge area and understand what this structure was really all about, because it's as sacred for them as it should be for us today. And we've kind of stepped away from that understanding, that sacredness and symbolism, but it is just as meaningful for many people around this planet as it was long, long ago.
And in this particular case with Stonehenge, in terms of its purpose, what it was there, with people from those regions, why did we lose the knowledge of how they did this? I mean, why did it simply vanish? Something cut it off. There was a point. Right.
Another great question, because these megalithic structures seem to have been built generally in about the same time frame, within a thousand years or two. We have the Great Pyramids going up. We have Stonehenge being constructed. We have pyramids being built in Eastern Asia. We have pyramids of huge stones being used to build pyramids and walls in South America. And then suddenly it stops, and we lose the technology, we lose the understanding. So there is something that occurred. People worldwide recognized what the technology was for them to work with stones, and then it disappeared. And why that is an excellent question. Something happened that it must have been decided that we cannot do this anymore. We need to stop creating these structures. Not that it was sort of a foreboding experience or an omen of something necessarily, but I don't think the technology was necessarily lost, but given up for a particular reason. Again, that's going to require more research to figure out why that was.
All right, now to the phones we go. First-time caller Chris in Rochester, New York. Chris, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yep. Hi, George.
Hi, Chris.
I've been listening to your show for a long time. My son introduced me to your show,
and
I enjoy it very much. It's one of the most truthful shows on earth.
Thank you, sir.
My question is about the caves in France. They have the dinosaur and the spaceman right next to each other. And I wondered what he thought about that. And also, one more. I'm Scandinavian, and I've done a lot of reading on Finland and how before it used to call Suomi. And one scientist said that he found an ancient city at the bottom of Finland, older than Pompeii. And I was wondering if you knew any information on that.
All right. Two good questions for you, Paul.
Yeah, regarding Finland, I don't have information on that. I'm not familiar with that that location, but I can't discount it. I can't really comment on it, and I can't promote it as something that's there. But I'd be very curious about it. You made me curious about it, and I'm going to look into that. What was his first question? Was
it had to do with the structure of I guess it was in France.
Oh, that's right, the caves in France.
Yeah,
there. Of course, there are various animals. You have the spaceman. You have the stars being indicated, and dinosaurs and so forth. Of course, people would have found at times artifacts or bones of dinosaurs and wondered what they were. And of course, dinosaur means thunder lizard or terrible lizard. So people were recognizing these things as life forms at one time. So that's one explanation for the dinosaur being put on the wall. Another one is it's not a dinosaur. It's representing something else. It could be a demon that someone envisioned during a trance state, a shaman popping some mushrooms and coming back to the people and describing what he saw and going into the cave and drawing it. So we really don't know what was in the mind of this person who drew these things and specifically what they represent. We see them as being a spaceman and a dinosaur, and that may be actually what he saw and interacted with them, communicated with them, and he's representing that on the cave walls. It could be something completely different. So I think we need to stay open until we have concrete evidence for what this really represented. Until then, it's just pure speculation.
Yeah, sure.
And it's difficult to work with that.
Paul, what about in Canada? Do they have any special kinds of structures or anything like that there?
There are numerous medicine wheels in Canada because, of course, the Native Americans, they weren't concerned with borders as we have them today. So there are many, many, many sacred structures in Canada, very similar to medicine wheels, and medicine wheels come in all shapes and sizes, oftentimes with circles, but not necessarily. And the accommodations, the living structures that people were in, that they would construct and family units would live in, sacred structures, constructed very similarly to the structures that people would construct for houses and communal buildings in Britain back 5,000 years ago. And even in South America, Middle America, in Mexico and so forth, you find virtually the same structures, these round structures, and then there will be four posts set in the middle of that circle, and in that circle would be the fire. And archaeologists have been trying to understand that here. Why are these four posts? Well, if you understand the Mayan symbolism and the circular symbolism going on here, and the fact that it is worldwide known by ancient and indigenous cultures, again, that circle is representing that sphere of life. The square of these four posts is also representing that sphere. It's a smaller circle. It's in two dimensions, you have the square. In three dimensions, you have the cube. That cube fits inside of the circle. So the cube actually represents the spherical form as well. So you have circles within for this family unit in their house. So the universe for that family becomes the house, and they are living within that community, within that house, and that fire of the source of energy, the source of life, is centered right in the middle. So, you know, that's what the symbolism is representing. And but again, that's something that the scientists can't really deal with because it's sacred symbolism. But if they can understand that through the liberal arts colleges who have been studying this from an anthropological standpoint, we will be miles ahead in understanding what these people were thinking of years ago at Stonehenge. And that's one of the main purposes that I'm here in England for the next 6 months, is to discuss this with people, present this to the academic community, and show them that this is what the symbolism is representing. Because once they understand that, so much of the archaeology is going to make so much sense for them at Stonehenge. Things will suddenly come together, and we will move much farther ahead than we are in understanding who these people were back 6,000 years ago.
Paul, if people want more information on what you do, of course, your website is linked up at ours at coasttocoastam.com. But your books, are they available right now?
The books are available. The Sacred Sphere has been out for about 2.5 years. And my new book on Stonehenge came out on March 28th, and it hit number one for ancient books on Amazon even before it was published on March 28th, and has been number one for books on ancient peoples for 5 weeks. So I'm very surprised at that. But Amazon is a great place to go, whether it's amazon.co.uk here in the UK, or .com in the States, or CA in Canada. It's doing well in all those places, and I would urge people to look there, or go to the publisher's website, which is a New Generation Publishing. And of course, it's available on virtually all the other internet sites that you can think of for ordering books. And it's also becoming more available at bookstores. It hasn't hit a lot of them yet, but if people ask for it at their favorite bookstore, it can definitely be obtained for you.
Why the fascination with ancient structures? Not just you, but everybody.
Yeah,
we all like these things.
Yeah, and for me, it was what do they represent geometrically? There's something going on here because the geometry is coming up the same geometry time and time again. And so that the Great Pyramid is a fantastic structure. It's huge. It's made up of huge stones. It's been there for a very long time, and we don't know how it was built. We don't know what it means. We don't, you know, what is this structure all about? So it's certainly going to strike our curiosity, and it's done that for many, many generations. So I can understand the fascination we have with them, just like Stonehenge. So I think it's a combination of a number of things for our fascination. But again, for me, it's the symbolism. What are these structures representing geometrically? Because architecture, after all, when you boil it all down, architecture is symbolism.
Well, that's true. We're going to come back with you, Paul. We'll take some final phone calls from all over the place, including worldwide, on Coast to Coast AM. And if any of you have been to Stonehenge or you've been to the pyramids, check in with us. A special number for you at 818-817-0021. 818-817-0021. We'll be back with final calls in a moment with Paul Burley. And, of course, on our next Coast to Coast program, we'll talk to Kevin Randall about some incredible work he's doing in the UFO field. All that and much more on Coast to Coast AM. East of the Rockies, Delight in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for calling.
Paul, I was wondering about them stars up there. You said you found six stars by Orion. Right. Do you think one of those could be, I had heard or even been told when I died 7 years ago that we would find another zodiac sign. And do you think that Cabello could be another zodiac sign?
That well, the star Capella is one of those six stars, and when you look to the east, the highest star in the sky will be Capella. The lowest one for the hexagon will be Sirius. So you have this hexagon of stars. Now, there are cultures, even the Greeks and the Romans created sculptures of the hexagon, but they were carving it out of the stones as a oval, and those six stars actually form a perfect oval. And within that oval, there will be a god, a Greek or a Roman god, and that god will be wrapped by a snake curling up, and there will be an egg shell on the top of the god standing there, and one below, and the god is holding a staff. Well, this god holding a staff, that's Orion. That's Orion holding his spear. And the eggshell is representing, again, this oval is the womb of life. So this is new life being created out of that eggshell and represented by Orion. This god that these people had was the god of fertility, the god of life, and the god of destruction, very similar to Shiva for the Hindu. Well, Shiva is this same god, the Orion within the womb of the universe, the six stars of the winter hexagon. So, I think that you're following along the lines correctly there, that this may represent for people now a new constellation if they want to consider that. Now we are looking at the womb of the universe, the source of the spirit, and where it returns to, because certainly all of these Neolithic cultures and indigenous cultures up until, you know, a couple hundred years ago, Native Americans, indigenous people living a Neolithic lifestyle in North America, were seeing this area as the womb of the universe, where the source of spirit comes from and returns to. So that may be what people will start to see now, because this is what was known for a very long time, up until a couple thousand years ago when things started to change, when many people turned to Christianity and lost the understanding of the symbolism. But even Christianity still retains the symbolism. It's just not recognized for what it was previously.
Angie is with us in Roswell, New Mexico, a very famous town. Angie, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, is there a possibility that maybe, just maybe, the Stonehenge might have some sort of Stargate-type deal?
In fact, it does. Not so much that one can enter into Stonehenge and be teletransported. Again, anything's possible. I haven't looked at that angle necessarily, so I can't really comment on that. But it's interesting that you mentioned Stargate, because there are four stones at Stonehenge that form a rectangle. Everything else at Stonehenge is circular, circles within circles. But these four stones are out on the perimeter by the ditch, and they form almost a perfect rectangle, but it's not exactly perfect. And in my analysis, those stones aren't related to seeing the sun or moon on the horizon, as many people are thinking they are. They are related back to Orion, because one of the stars in one corner is representing Sirius. The other one is representing Aldebaran, which is the brightest star in Taurus, right where the two horns of Taurus meet. And they form opposite corners of a rectangle about Orion. Now, Orion, as a god for various cultures, has represented a gateway for life. And so here we have the door of that gateway surrounding Orion. And what the people did after building Stonehenge and placing these four stones, they're called the station stones, is they envisioned that gateway rotate it and place down upon Stonehenge. So symbolically, we have the sky god, the creator of life, the source of the spirit, coming down and placed upon Stonehenge. Well, what is Stonehenge again? It's the womb of the Earth. This is Mother Earth. And so you're bringing down the male aspect down onto the female aspect, the cosmic dome onto Mother Earth. And you are, again, you have this conception of new life for the new year, the new conception of the son or the daughter that's going to represent life for the next year. So that's what these station stones are representing. And up until now, people have thought, well, they're just oriented towards the horizon, towards the sun or the moon at particular times. But these alignments are approximate. But this alignment for this gateway to life in around Orion and rotated down fits perfectly. And it appears also that Orion over time changed sizes was envisioned as being a different size, different scale at Stonehenge. And so he begins to take on, manifest in new ways at Stonehenge. And I discuss that in the book. It's just fascinating how it came from just one point in the hexagon to suddenly a huge Orion that is located, covering miles across the Salisbury Plain.
Paul, have you ruled out any ET presence?
I haven't. It's very possible, like many other possibilities, that there were ETs or aliens there. So I can't discount it, but I will say that 1,000 years before Stonehenge was constructed, when the Cursus was constructed, 1.7 miles long, and I have a photograph of that, George, on your website. I have a number of photographs from the book that shows what a Cursus is and shows this gateway of Orion coming down onto Stonehenge. So people can go to your website and take a look at that. But 1,000 years then before Stonehenge was constructed, when we look at the Cursus, what had happened a couple hundred years before that, it was a mass migration of aliens to Stonehenge. Those aliens were from France, so, which is a little curious.
Aliens, but nonetheless, right?
And so there was a couple of mass migrations into Scotland and into southern Britain, and the greatest density of people at that time were in the Salisbury area, the Salisbury Plain, right around Stonehenge. So this explains where you have a significant number of people who had already been working with stones. And so they knew how to move them, dress them, set them up, and they created the symbolism that we see at Stonehenge. And they created all these magnificent, huge structures, moving a lot of rock, a lot of chalk bedrock, a lot of soil to create these henges and so forth. And so the resources were there for this to be done, and so we see this starting to be created about 3500 BC, and it's just phenomenal what they were able to do. And at that time, 3500 BC is about the same time as the end of pre-dynastic Egypt, where we start to see Orion being involved as the god Osiris, and you start eventually you see the pyramids being constructed when Stonehenge was constructed. So there are a lot of parallels here going on, but originally I think it was a combination of indigenous people from Britain with aliens coming from France, mixing together the two cultures that ultimately related in this fantastic expression of the source of spirit on Salisbury Plain, and it's the oldest such expression symbolically on the face of the earth that I know of. Again, it's 1,000 years older than the pyramids. So this is becomes a very important landscape, let alone Stonehenge, for what it represents for humanity.
Chuck, Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, Wildcard Line. Hey, Chuck, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Yeah, I was wanting to get back there. I thought you might find it interesting, and Paul probably knows that on Bear Butte there. There was a Indian there, and he was climbing up, and this bear chased him. And the bear chased him to Devil's Tower there in Wyoming. And he got to the top, and the bear scraped and scraped trying to get up there, and that's how the lions got on Devil's Tower. And that was also where Close Encounters of the Third Kind was filmed.
Yeah, that's why it's a curious coincidence there, and the it's also said in the mythology that there were seven girls that were on the top of Devil's Tower, and the bear trying to get to them. And ultimately, those girls are represented by the Pleiades, the seven stars of the Pleiades. So the mythology is very interesting because, again, it's related to the factual history of the people who were telling this oral history for a very long time that, that wasn't written down until ethnographers started recording it back in the early 1900s.
All right, take a few more calls here. Ivan is in Bozeman, Montana. Ivan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
George, you have a very wonderful program tonight. Paul, I was wondering if you were talking about all of these structures are actually spears, and I was wondering what you were think of the stone balls of Costa Rica. They're hard stone, very, very hard stone, and they are spherical like basketballs, and they range anywhere from 7 inches in diameter to over 8 feet, and they're found all over the country and even at the top of the mountains. And I was wondering what you know about those.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those. I've seen a number of those stones. And again, symbolically, now we don't have the circle, but we have the construction, the shaping of stones, part of Mother Earth to be spherical, to represent that sphere, to represent the Earth, to represent the universe, to represent that part of the world in which an individual is living. So that's what, again, that's what the symbolism is indicating. And you don't understand that symbolism without some understanding of the culture, the world culture that was involved in this. But certainly those stones are very remarkable for Stone Age people, essentially, to be constructing these so beautifully as spheres is just amazing. It's just hard to imagine how people could do that, how much time they were spending on one stone in order to create those spheres. But symbolically, that's what they are representing.
What could you say about the designer, Paul, of something like Stonehenge? An individual, do you think? Like an architect? How did they do that?
Yeah. Well, people back then were as intelligent as we are today, and they just didn't have the technology that we have today. And, of course, we don't have the technology that people 5,000 years from now will have. So very intelligent people, well-versed in the mythology and understanding where life came from. Beyond mythology, like I say, I believe quite certainly that these people were not living a religion, that this was a sacred life way, 24 hours a day. They were recognizing this source of spirit and the source of life and the body coming from the earth and so forth, and the connection of the cosmos with the earth to create that spherical structure representing life. So with these people knowing this and having shamans or priests or priestesses, whoever these people were, recognizing these things, seeing a need to create a symbol that would be eternal, that represented, I can well see an individual or several of these people gathered together and deciding that it is... this structure had to be constructed. It wasn't just at a whim that a few people wanted to do that. I believe everyone there that caught wind of the possibility of constructing this winter hexagon and constructing the Milky Way as the Cursus and what they created at Stonehenge 1,000 years later, that this had to be constructed. The pyramids had to be constructed. This isn't something people just were forced to do by a chieftain at Stonehenge. Everyone wanted to participate, I believe, and it had to be constructed, and so therefore it was. Where there's a will, there's a way. But the idea was probably seeded by someone, but it caught fire, I suspect, and everyone got together, and and they did an amazing thing.
Jude, Staten Island, New York. Jude, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Paul used the word coincidence, and knowing your point of view on that particular topic... I called just before you made the request. I went to see Stonehenge with friends in the early 70s.
Uh-huh.
Early in the summer morning, it was beautiful. Awesome. And the interesting thing about it was with people being able to touch the stones.
Yeah.
And some people having a lack of respect by taking pictures, by climbing on it, you. And then I went back again in the late 80s. And it's all been roped off because of the lack of respect.
You can't get to it now. That's right. Do they have a security person there?
Oh, they have. They have security guards. It's all roped off, and there are busloads of people, which were not there in the 70s.
Yeah.
People went out of their way to see it at one point, but now it's become so famous, I guess.
What about that security, Paul? What do you think?
There are a number of security agents that are at Stonehenge the entire time that the public is there to view it, and quite rightly so, because we don't want those stones damaged, someone painting them or scraping on them, doing something. However, if one makes a reservation early enough, a group of people are allowed in to walk amongst the stones. They're not to touch them, but they can walk amongst the stones still, but you have to make a reservation in order to do that. Otherwise, people are kept on a pathway that goes around the henge, so you can see the stones 360 degrees all the way around it, but then it's roped off, so you have to stay well away from the stones. So, but I would encourage anyone who can make it to go there, and just to be able to stand there and appreciate what these people constructed 4,500 years ago, and the sanctity of that space and what it represents for humanity. It is really something once you recognize that that's what it's representing, that it's not just an amazing structure that was built, but what it was intended to represent.
Are you in awe, Paul, when you see the structure and you walk up to it?
Oh, yes. There, people have commented that, oh, it's smaller than I thought it was. Well, you try to move a 40-ton block of stone. I am in awe of what they were able to accomplish, not knowing how they were able to do that. And for them to have the will to create something so fantastic, it's almost unbelievable that they had constructed that structure so long ago, that one can't help but be in awe of the people that were able to do it and what they were able to accomplish, and also that they wanted to do it because it had to be had to be done. They knew where the source of life was. They didn't have a belief or faith. I think they knew where the source of life was from, the source of spirit. And this was known around the world, that this was the area, the womb of the universe. And we will construct this because it's going to stand for eternity to represent that.
Great job, Paul. Websites, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And everybody go take a look at the video that we've got at coasttocoastam.com as well, the pictures. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.